What is going on, Sharp Football family? It is your resident Swami of Konami, Rich Rebar. Usually I'm not in this chair, you know, hosting. I'm usually the analyst, Ray's out here, you know, throwing things to me. But we're going to do some things a little differently this month for draft season. I'm going to kind of walk through each position with a guest. I couldn't think of anyone better to talk quarterbacks than our first, you know, our own in-house guy, Ryan McChrystal. I like to refer to him as Ryan McChrystal Ball, you know, because he is so on fire with all of his college picks, you know, last year. Before we bring him on and we kind of jump into kind of the nitty gritty of this quarterback class, I do want to remind everyone, head over to sharpfootballanalysis.com. You can check out the draft kit where I've written up in-depth literally every prospect. You can use promo code BestBallNFL, get yourself a couple bucks off of that right now. Also, you know, Ryan has done stuff with Brendan Donahue. They're doing mock drafts. We've got all kinds of draft content up there. That's all free on the site. Ryan's got his top 50 big board. I think, what are we on mock draft? What number are we on right now, Ryan?
I think we've got three up there now. 4.0 will be up next Monday.
Oh, beautiful. You love to see it. But yeah, this is your time to shine. I mean, Ryan's literally one of the best, you know, mock drafters in the game. He crushes, you know, college props. And I know that you do NFL and you do NFL props and watch stuff. How much more, you know, college football are you watching than, you know, NFL, like during the regular weekend?
I definitely prioritize college football. That's my favorite. But, you know, I play plenty of fantasy and do the NFL props for us as well. So I'm definitely tuned in on Sundays for that stuff also.
I love it. Yeah, you're out here firing though, and you guys, your picks were just absolutely incredible this year. I encourage everyone, you know, if you haven't followed, you know, not to put pressure on you, you know, when we get to September, but man, especially early in the year when you've got kind of that edge and you know all the roster changes, all the people that went through the transfer portal and everything, like just get those little micro edges and start crushing, hit the ground running. But yeah, we're going to talk about this quarterback class. I've actually done this show with you a couple years in a row where we talk about the quarterbacks, and we actually finally have like a legit, like really good group. Not that last year's was bad. We had a couple real top end, you know, prospects, but this is a really intriguing group. I remember 2 years ago, we did that awful, you know, 2021 class where people were debating, you know, Malik Willis going in the first round and Kenny Pickett. And we've seen how that is gone now, 2 years removed from that draft, how all those teams have bailed on those players. And we'll touch on kind of some smoke and fire stuff in a second, but I do want to think one of the things I was going through this draft class in general was it's so unique from the COVID season, right? Like the COVID year that granted everyone kind of a year of eligibility. This is kind of the first year where it's got like its major thumbprint on the draft, and it showed up in every position, but I don't think any position it showed up more greatly than this quarterback class. We've got guys like Jaden Daniels. We've got Bo Nix. We've got Michael Penix. Guys that, you know, went to other schools, didn't have initial success at those schools, you know, got an extra year. They really used this extra year to their advantage, all three of those guys. So I just want to know, if at all, like, how do you factor in all of these guys getting that extra year? Do you weigh it heavily? Like, how do you handle, you know, this just unique kind of parameters that are around these guys entering the NFL?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question because it's definitely unique. Like, you got to treat quarterbacks a little bit differently than the other positions, because I think probably at every other position, the 21-year-old is going to have a little bit more built-in value than the 24-year-old. But at quarterback, I think you can make a pretty strong case that the opposite is actually true, especially right now with the way that the league is structured and the value of rookie quarterbacks. It takes time to develop these guys. The 21-year-old, aside from a rare exception, you know, maybe someone like Caleb Williams is that exception, they're not coming in ready to win right away. And so you kind of have, you're wasting one of those valuable rookie contract years almost on just like rebuilding the roster and getting your quarterback ready to play. But this year we have some guys who are a little bit older, you know, like Michael Penix and Bo Nix are obviously, you know, the two of the biggest name or two of the guys that have had the most experience. Jaden Daniels also in that mix as well as having extra experience. You know, a year ago at this time, there's no chance we're talking about Jaden Daniels going in the first round. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, those types of players who can come in and are probably a little more polished and ready to play right away, is there extra value in that? I think you could make a case for that, you know, especially making the Drake May direct comparison, like a guy who's certainly younger and probably has a better ceiling than any of those three guys that I just mentioned with more experience. But you're not winning in year one with Drake May. I'd be stunned if he is, you know, maybe he lands on a team with a good defense and they stumble to the playoffs, but like he's not carrying a team to the playoffs. But maybe one of those other guys lands on a team with a decent offensive cast around him, and he actually looks good taking a team to the playoffs in year one or year two. So I think every GM is probably valuing that added experience and being a little bit more NFL ready differently. There's probably some teams, depending on their rebuilding situations, that would rather have Drake May, and just that, you know, they're not going anywhere the first 2 years anyway, and so they'll swing for the higher ceiling. But I think there's certainly some other teams that could make a strong argument that the slightly lower ceiling, but the guy who's ready to play right away, and maybe you get 5 years of that rookie contract where he's actually, you know, you actually are a playoff contender because they're ready to come in day one. It's just a really unique situation. And mm-hmm. not only is it a conversation for this year, it could potentially be something that affects quarterback decisions and GMs moving forward, because we're not going to have the COVID year, obviously, but because of NIL, it's a little bit, you know, those junior quarterbacks that are on the fence about turning pro or not, does it make more sense for them to go back to school, get paid as a nice senior quarterback, a well-known name in your market and whatnot, and get that extra year of experience to maybe where you can blossom in the way that Nix and Penix and Daniels did this past year? I think it has the potential to play out that way, even without the COVID year in the future.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because, you know, when we were growing up, you know, as, you know, young football heads, it used to be the quarterback never started, right? Like quarterbacks never started like in year one. It was always like you're grooming this guy. Then like the rookie contract started to be like a factor, teams kind of going all in. Obviously, you know, your tenure as an organization, like your window is small, right? Like you don't get granted like a grace period in the NFL anymore, like where you struggle for 2 or 3 years, like you're getting fired, you're out. So teams are pressing these guys to play more than ever. It is a unique dynamic. And I'm going to wonder too, the success of these guys, right? Like the initial success these guys have in year one, if we see more guys do this, because it's not a complete overlap, like where a guy's older, like Joe Burrow. Like Joe Burrow still only started 25 games in college. Like we've got three guys that started over 50 games in college, which is pretty unheard of. Actually, if, you know, we do get, you know, Bo Nix sneaking in the first round, he will have the most college starts of any first round quarterback I have in my database going back to the 2000s. So it's going to be interesting to see, especially when you talk about, like, when you look at all three of these guys and, you know, Jaden Daniels won a Heisman Trophy coming back for a year he wouldn't have had. You know, if we see guys maybe try to stay an extra year, like you said, collect some of that NIL, it is kind of a nebulous spot we're in. And it's going to be kind of, I think, a lot contingent on, you know, what initial success these guys have, which kind of builds me into kind of my next question. The couple of years we've done this, you know, we get to April, hot takes start flying. We start to see some steam coming out. You know, 2 years ago, people were pushing Desmond Ridder into the first round. You know, last year we had Will Levis potentially going, what, like two overall, like the week of the draft. And like he ends up going in the second round. By the time we get to the NFL draft, though, we haven't seen the NFL actually pull the trigger on these kind of quarterbacks that have like these fringe profiles. And one, do you kind of even see guys like Bo Nix or Michael Penix even having those fringe profiles? And, you know, two, do you think when we get there that you do see the kind of smoke and we do see like these guys do maybe sneak into the first round?
Yeah. I mean, this conversation comes up every year, like you said, and I'm usually leading the charge on this. I have a tweet that I just sort of have in the file ready to go every year around this time when we start to hear so-and-so is generating first round buzz. Because it happens almost every single year. Last year it was Hendon Hooker right around this time. Hooker's getting first round buzz. Then before that it was Ridder, Davis Mills, Jacob Eason, Will Greer, Davis Webb. I mean, it's a long list of bad, exclusively bad quarterbacks. Nobody ever pans out. I mean, we don't know about Hendon Hooker, I guess. We should leave him out of that because we haven't seen him yet. But no one has ever panned out of that guy who's in that buzz. And I think you could make an argument that Penix and Nix are the next up because they're definitely on that fringe, right? There's not like an obvious spot for them to go. And so, you know, maybe a team trades back from where they are in the first round, a team like, you know, Minnesota, Denver, Raiders, like maybe they trade back or maybe they trade up to that late first round. They're in that fringe range for sure. But I don't think I really want to put them in that same category as those guys like Hooker, Ridder, Davis Mills. I think that's a little bit different. Part of the reason is just what we talked about, the experience. You know, most of these other guys are, you know, like Jacob Eason is the prime example of this, of a guy with just, you know, obvious raw skills, but just didn't really put it together in college. And so you can certainly see teams having conversations about a guy like Jacob Eason, who was like a five-star prospect, 6 foot six, big arm, and being, you know, having those conversations like, well, like if we bring him in, like, do we have enough supporting cast around it? Like, they could have those types of conversations where like they're trying to talk themselves into it. But ultimately on draft day, the GM says, listen, guys, I'm not betting my career on this guy. He's done nothing. I think that's generally how those conversations go. But with Penix and Knicks, it's so much different because we know what they are. Like, they're going to come in and they could start day one and they could probably be decent for you. So it's a little bit of a different conversation with those guys. Penix specifically, I would say it sort of falls into a different category for me because his offseason has not gone the way I expected. I actually thought we were going to start the offseason talking about Penix solidly in the first round. And maybe around the time that the combine rolled around and he went through the medical checks, we would start to hear teams questioning that. Because obviously he's had multiple season-ending right. knee injuries. He's a little bit older too, having spent the extra year in college. And so I thought that conversation would start to build around the combine as we started hearing teams questioning that and pushing him into the second round for that reason. But kind of the opposite was happened. I guess maybe because it was so well publicized, because Washington made it to the playoff this year and he got a lot of publicity. And so it was very well known that he was an older prospect who had a long injury history. And so I think everybody building mock drafts sort of started at that point of like, well, he's not going to go in the first round because of, you know, he's older and he's got the injuries. And now we've sort of gone through that phase where teams have checked his medicals and we haven't really seen a lot of headlines of teams. You know, we haven't heard about teams removing him from their draft board or anything like that. So maybe it's a case of, yeah, he had some injuries, but then he spent two full healthy seasons in Washington, had a spectacular year this past year. And teams now look at him as, you know, let's bring him in. Like, from a coach's perspective, your job's not guaranteed beyond two, maybe 3 years in most cases. So if Penix comes in and plays well for 2 or 3 years and you're a playoff contender, that sounds great. So I think that philosophy sort of, there's definitely going to be certain teams that are going to have that view Penix through that lens. And so I think that's why he sort of falls into a different category for me. And he could potentially sneak into the first round pretty legitimately. I don't think it would be a reach because what he is day one is significantly better than any of those other quarterbacks like Hooker, Ritter, Mills, whatnot that I mentioned. The other factor here is really the Hendon Hooker effect, because last year, like I mentioned, there was buzz around Hendon Hooker going in the first round. And I've seen a lot of people draw the comparison between Hooker and Penix, older quarterback, injury history, first round buzz, then he slides to the third round. I think the thing that's overlooked in that comparison is the fact that Hooker came from Tennessee, where he was playing in Josh Heupel's mm-hmm. offense, which is really the Art Briles Bear Raid offense from when he was at Baylor. No one has ever come out of that offense and had success. You mean, RG3 is probably the best example of someone who's come out of there and had a little bit of success that rookie year that he had, but that was in an offense that was very much geared towards trying to replicate what he did in college. And then they tried to build upon that, couldn't do it. It's such a simplistic offense that they run that no one is ready to come in to the NFL and play. And so with Hooker, you had an older quarterback who was going to have to sit out his first year, probably not going to be ready to play even a second year because he doesn't know how to run anything close to an NFL offense. Penix is the opposite. Like, that's an NFL offense they're running at Oregon. He's making a ton of throws from the pocket, down the field, towards the sideline. One of the stats I really like to look at to sort of put a stat behind NFL readiness is your traditional dropback rate in college, how often you're taking a three-step dropback or more. Because in the NFL, even though the game has evolved to become more like college, it's still a 61% average. Right. 61% is the average traditional dropback rate across the NFL, and very few teams are below 50%. In college, almost everybody is below 15%. And then at the bottom of that, you've got the Tennessee offense, where Hendon Hooker was at 14% his senior year at Tennessee. So he's playing a different sport. Michael Penix's average last year at Washington was 62%. So he's playing an NFL offense, and he was really good in it last year. So I think that teams are just going to view him very differently. As close to a polished product as you're going to get at a quarterback. Now, it's not, though, the ceiling might not be much more beyond what you already have. And so that's why he's not being talked about as a top 10 lock. But, you know, that's why I definitely see him as being, if he goes in the first round, I don't think it's a huge reach. I think it's a pretty legitimate pick where you're getting someone who's going to contribute right away.
Did you mock him in the first round yet? Is he there?
I haven't yet. I wanted to early on, because like I said, I thought that was where we were going to be at. And then, you know, we did my first mock draft didn't come out until a little bit after the Super Bowl. And you know, there were a lot of big names out there. I certainly go around and look at other mock drafts, you know, guys like Daniel Jeremiah and Mel Kiper and whatnot. They're more connected than I am. So when there's a consensus, none of those guys had him in their first round early on. So when there's a consensus like that from the big names, who am I to go against that, especially early in the process? They certainly have more connections than I do to know that type of stuff early on. So when there's a strong consensus like that, I'm going to side with them because they do their homework on this stuff too. So they know what they're talking about. But now we're starting to see people come around. He was in Daniel Jeremiah's first round mock draft most recently. And so I'm starting to lean that direction. It's hard to fit him in though. I should say, I don't like projecting trades.
Without trades.
So it's hard to fit him in because I don't see a team like the Raiders or Broncos taking him at that spot. But it would make perfect sense for them to trade down, get a few picks, and then it makes it even easier to justify to like taking, because you can fill all your other holes on day two then, because you're going to pick up an extra pick there if you move down. So if someone trades down to pick 25, 26, 27 or whatnot and takes them there, that feels like a pretty good strategy for a team that needs, especially the Raiders and Denver specifically, of how desperate they are for a quarterback, because he can come in and play right away. And then if you can pick up extra picks in the process, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, we kind of have a weird grouping of NFL teams this year that have really clear QB needs, but kind of no like pipeline to get those guys at where they pick in the draft. We talked about, Minnesota, Denver, the Raiders, like all of those teams, like they, when this process first started, like they are probably praying like, hey, maybe JJ McCarthy is there at those low spots. But JJ McCarthy now has gotten like the steam like this offseason. And I know you were early and you were saying like, hey, he's going to push up. I mean, how high do you really realistically think he can go? Do you think he's in play at 2 overall?
I think Jaden Daniels is a pretty heavy favorite to go number 2. I've had that all along. It just makes the most sense for what they're going to run with Cliff Kingsbury at offense. Mm-hmm. I think he's a pretty good fit for them. And there's plenty of people who, just looking at all the other public draft boards that are out there for people who evaluate prospects, he's the second quarterback on quite a few of those. And so it's the fact that he's a good offense and it's not a crazy reach, or it's a good fit for the offense and it's not a crazy reach, just value-wise, I think it's plausible. I think that he's the favorite there. That said, it wouldn't shock me if McCarthy is number 2 on some boards. The thing is, he's just a tricky evaluation because Jim Harbaugh forced him to be a game manager, that they wanted to run the ball and play good defense. And all they wanted from him was just don't screw it up. Even last year when, we had seen, he had played well 2 years ago in his first year as a starter, you would think that they would want to open the offense up a little bit more. And they still, rightfully so, said, no, we're just going to win by running the ball.
Those khakis aren't coming off, baby.
Yeah. And it worked. They won a national championship. So like, we can't really question the strategy. It worked for them, but it makes it a difficult evaluation because I think McCarthy, if he were to design the offense, he wants to play a pretty aggressive, wild style of football because there's flashes of that. And we specifically saw that earlier this year in some of those games early on where there was no question that Michigan was going to be able to win the game pretty easily. He rolled out of the pocket. He made some really aggressive throws downfield. And there were a couple highlight plays, but then he also threw 3 interceptions against Bowling Green. And at least 2 of them were his fault. They were just dumb plays. And so Harbaugh shut it down. He said, we're not doing this. Lock it down, run the ball. And so, I mean, they did exactly that. And like late in the season against in their 2 biggest games before the playoffs against Ohio State and Penn State, McCarthy threw 4 passes in those 2 games combined beyond 10 yards down the field. So how do you really fairly evaluate a guy who was just, he was completely shut down. They didn't let him showcase his talent. Like I said, there's flashes of it. And, he clearly has above average athleticism. There are a few highlight plays of him rolling out of the pocket and making some nice throws downfield. But then, like I said, against a bad Bowling Green team, there's some plays of him making some really dumb decisions as well. So what is he? If you turned him loose, is he going to look, more like a Jaden Daniels? Or would he have thrown, 15 interceptions this past year? I don't know the answer to that. And so that's why for me, he's a really tough evaluation. I should say I have him much further down my board. I would hesitate to spend a first round pick on him, but I should preface that by saying that I'm entering these evaluations being a little bit more risk averse than some people are. Some people are all about swinging for the fences with the ceiling. So I would prefer to take the approach of, I might be wrong about him because I see the flashes, but I'm just not going to be the guy to take that risk and make that mistake. Because if you draft a quarterback, you're betting your career on it, right? So yeah. I would not bet my career on someone, even though I see the ceiling and he might be fantastic. I'm not going to embarrass myself because it's unknown. We just don't know. So it's just a really tough evaluation because we haven't seen him consistently forced to make those decisions. You compare that to someone like Penix. I think it's pretty easy to say McCarthy has a higher ceiling because there's a lot that there's those flashes. And maybe when you turn him loose, he's able to consistently cash in on those plays. But Penix, I've seen him in an NFL offense. I've seen him make plays down the field. I've seen him make decisions from the pocket and protect the ball and avoid sacks. And I just haven't seen McCarthy forced to do that yet. So that's the type of player that I'm generally going to avoid. But NFL teams take bigger gambles than JJ McCarthy all the time. And so he's definitely going in the top 20 picks. And I think going in the top 10 is very realistic because, you know, if you're a team like, I think the Giants are a perfect example of a team that could take a chance on him because those guys, I don't know that they're necessarily on the hot seat, but they're starting to feel it get warm, certainly, if they don't turn it around. If they have another bad year with Daniel Jones as their only quarterback option, the seat's going to be very hot if they even survive the season. So they could absolutely say, you know what, there's enough highlights here that we can talk ourselves into taking a chance on McCarthy. And I think that's the reason why ultimately someone takes him in the top 12 or so picks.
Yeah, I mean, McCarthy, from like a fantasy football stance, like, is so easy for me because I could just say, like, hey, I'm not putting my reputation on him. His odds to be like an actual front end like fantasy scorer are so thin, right? Like, so I can just be like, you know, he's off my board in like dynasty drafts, but an NFL team like kind of has to take that chance with him. And it's gonna be interesting to see kind of like how he plays out with Drake May, because he, you know, again, these are the two young guys, right? Like very small starting size samples, especially for Drake May. He's also kind of a tricky eval. He doesn't have a very clean profile at all, at least not for like where we believe he's going to get drafted, but he kind of has like all of those things that like the old school days, like we would say, this dude's definitely going to, like, people are going to fall in love with this, right? Like, he's 6'4", 220 pounds, throws the ball like Uncle Rico over the mountains. I comp him to Jordan Love, for like better or worse. Like, I treat him more as like a Jordan Lovean prospect instead of like a Josh Allen, like, thing. And like, you see Jordan Love, like, you know, got to sit, got to develop, and, you know, what happened, got paid off in the middle of the season. But we're probably not going to get that with Drake May. But the kind of the dichotomy around Drake May is like, he's got as high a ceiling as any quarterback in this class. Like, are you buying that? Do you think McCarthy should be in contention to even go ahead of him? Does he end up as the QB3 or even potentially the QB2 in this draft?
Yeah, May is tough. I have him ranked ahead of McCarthy. And like I said, part of the reason is that is I've seen Drake May more. Like, I just have a little bit more confidence in what he is. There's been a lot of bad from Drake May, but there's also been a lot more good. You know, he's played more. He's been asked to win games for them, and he's done it occasionally. Not against the greatest competition. They played a pretty weak schedule this year, particularly. But we've seen him have to put the team on his shoulders more often. And there have been some bad performances, but he's also come through sometimes too. And so that just gives me a little bit more confidence that he's maybe a little bit closer to the ceiling. I can buy into the ceiling a little bit easier with someone who I've seen do it before. McCarthy's never had to put the team on his shoulders before. So I have to question whether or not he can ever do it if we've never seen it, even though I think the talent is there. But May is tricky in other ways too, because although we've seen a little bit more of the good, we've also seen a lot of the bad. And this year in particular raised some really big doubts for me with May, because he took a step back from the previous year. And it doesn't, you can't really excuse it, because their schedule actually got easier this year. Yeah, the offensive line wasn't great, but it also wasn't good 2 years ago either. And, you know, they even added to the receiving core, getting Devontae Walker. You know, he missed a couple of games early on in the year, but he was fantastic down the stretch for them. And so with the talent around him, I think he should have been more consistent. One of the stats that I like to reference with quarterback prospects is route adjusted on target rate. Basically, look at the passes that they throw, and, like, you know, if you're throwing a screen pass, you're going to have a very high on target rate, right? That's an easy pass. 90% of the time, you're going to make an on target throw. If you're asked to throw downfield a lot more often, if you're throwing to a go route, you're going to be off target a lot. The on target rate for that is below 50%. It's just a harder throw to make. So accounting for all of the different throws that they make, the routes that they're throwing to, what is your on target rate above or below the average rate for all the throws that you made? And Drake Mays was 9% below expected this past year of the first round quarterback prospects, including Penix and Nix in that conversation. He's the only one below average. And he's far below average. That's one of the worst rates among all the Power Five quarterbacks from this past year. To put it into perspective a little bit, Anthony Richardson last year, who was obviously crushed for his inability to throw the ball, was 10% below expected. So he's in that Anthony Richardson range. Now, Richardson obviously was drafted early, but for different reasons, right? Like Richardson has just like crazy athletic profile, and May is a good athlete, especially at his size, but he's not going to change your offense with the athleticism the way that Anthony Richardson does. So man, May is a tough evaluation for that reason, because what are you getting? I think it's really going, he's a quarterback that could swing any direction. He's going to need stability. You mentioned Josh Allen as a comp that some people have thrown out there. I think the highlights with Josh Allen, that's a reasonable comp. Some of his highlights do look like it, with the size that he has and his ability to move with the football. He does
throwing a pass left-handed.
Yeah, he makes some crazy plays too. But look at one of the reasons why Josh Allen succeeded despite his sort of like wide variance of potential outcomes when he entered the league. Buffalo created an incredibly stable environment around him. I think they made a change at their quarterback coach after his rookie year, but then he had Ken Dorsey as his quarterback coach for a long time. He spent his first 4 years of his career with the same head coach, same offensive coordinator. They went out and they got Stephon Diggs. They invested heavily in the offensive line. They created such a great environment around him. That's how quarterbacks develop. And then, just to throw out another example from that same draft class, look at what Baker Mayfield had to go through in his career. The Browns changing offensive coordinators every 8 games or so while he was there. And then he's bounced around the league since then. You can't develop a quarterback that way. Baker Mayfield never really had a chance to succeed in Cleveland with the way that they were shuffling the staff around. And Buffalo did things the complete opposite way from Cleveland. And they just created a very stable environment. That's how you develop someone like that. So May has to go to a situation like that in order to have success. And if he does, maybe we're talking about him in the same way that we're talking about Josh Allen 5 years later. But, unfortunately, most teams don't operate that. Even though it's the obvious way to develop a quarterback, almost nobody actually does it.
Yeah, I mean, you look at May from a final year perspective, he was 41st percentile in touchdown interception rate, for prospects entering the NFL, 45th percentile in completion rate. He is 62 percentile in yards or pass attempt. Obviously, he's throwing the ball downfield. And that's kind of like the strength of his game, or was, in college. And let's just hypothetically say Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels go 1-2. You're the New England Patriots, pick 3. Are you taking Drake May when your wide receiver core is right now not built to support a guy like Drake May's attributes? I mean, your wide receivers right now are Kendrick Bourne, Demario Pop Douglas, KJ Osborne, the ghost of Tyquan Thornton. Like, they have nobody that can win downfield on any level. And that's what Drake May wants to do, or has shown us that's what he wants to do in the small sample. And then you kind of like pair that up with, the guys like Bo Nix and Penix. We said, like, well, what if they were forced to come out like at this sample, right? Like, would they're like year two production, and year three production doesn't look anywhere near, as good either. But if you're the Patriots and you're saying, all right, I'm going to take this quarterback, we're here, we got to swing, right? You're telling yourself that, but you have to bypass on Marvin Harrison. You have to bypass on Joe Alt, potentially guys at, that also provide a lot of contractual leverage on rookie contracts if you hit on at those positions. I mean, how do you handle that? Do you just have to make the blind swing at quarterback? Because right now, spoiler alert, Ryan's big board. Caleb Williams is even number one. So we're talking the Patriots aren't going to be able to get Caleb Williams. They're probably not going to get QB2. So you're at QB3 and your top player is on the board. Like, how do you handle that situation? I mean, obviously you're the one not making that pick, but I mean, this class is loaded at those positions, and they're dire needs for this franchise too.
Yeah, man, that's got to be a tough conversation for them to have, to try to make this decision, because it's so unique that you would have such. I mean, Joe Alt, Marvin Harrison Jr., even Malik Nabers and Roma Dunze, I would put in that category of like you would be thrilled to get those guys third overall most years. Like, those are guys that are going to come in and should contribute right away and have elite ceilings. But you obviously need a quarterback, because you're going nowhere right now with Jacoby Brissett. So I think if it were me, I could see this going both directions. I think if it were me, like I said, I tend to be pretty risk averse. I don't want to bet my career on a JJ McCarthy or a Drake May, who has a wide range of outcomes. They could come in and they could be terrible as rookies, develop bad habits, and it could, by year two, midway through year two, you could already be saying, it's not going to work. We screwed this up. And in that case, you're getting fired and your career is now tarnished because of that. And you've got a first-time GM there and a first-time head coach there, and they could be thinking those same things, be like, man, do I really want to bet my reputation on this guy when I don't need to, because I'm in my first year in this job, and if we don't come away with a quarterback, I'm not getting fired after year one. Like, if we hit a home run with Joe Alt or Marvin Harrison Jr. and we go, you know, we win five games our first year, that's okay. People are going to live with that, and we're going to live to see year two and figure out the quarterback situation later. But I mean, like I said, I think that's what I would do. But this front office, there've been some big changes there, obviously, without Bill Belichick in charge. And so when we have a new front office in charge, I like to try to put myself in the mindset of what would we think of this team if it was the team that the front office most closely resembles? So you've got Elliott Wolf, who seems to be the guy in charge. He spent a lot of his career in Green Bay. That's obviously, his dad was in Green Bay for a long time. He came up to those ranks. He also hired Alonzo Highsmith, who spent a long time in Green Bay as well. So I'm kind of putting myself in the mindset of what would the Packers do? Because that's probably the closest comparison we have to the mindset they're taking. And what have the Packers done in the past? Well, you actually already mentioned it as a comparison to Drake May. They drafted Jordan Love and they sat him for a while, and they were very patient with him. They drafted Aaron Rodgers and they sat him, and they were very patient with him. Now, they drafted both of those guys later in the first round, obviously. And in both cases, they already had a quarterback. They made it easy to sit. But, you know, in the Drake May, I guess with both of them, really, even though it was later in the round and it was less of a risk, those were controversial decisions, like drafting a quarterback when you've already got Aaron Rodgers or Brett Favre under contract. Those were controversial choices. So they made some tough choices in order to bring someone in and sit them. So if they drafted Drake May or McCarthy and they said, you know what, we're going to be bad next year with Jacoby Brissett at quarterback, but who cares? We're going to make him sit and we're going to make him learn. They could, you know, they've made tough decisions before in Green Bay. So if Elliott Wolf wants to try to replicate that and do that with Drake May or McCarthy, who has a high upside but just isn't ready right now, they might choose to do that. I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah. I mean, the problem like that there, that scenario is you have to win games, right? Because if you don't win games, then every single, you know, post game presser is, when is Drake May playing? When is Drake May playing?
It certainly makes it easier, but they're in such a unique position where everybody in the fan base realizes, all right, this is year zero. Belichick's gone. You know, we've had 20 plus years of this regime. We're hitting the reset button. So I think they are in sort of the fact that they're moving on from such a long, successful regime, I think it does buy them a little bit extra time than it might elsewhere.
I don't know. Have you been to Boston?
Don't listen to talk radio.
No, I'm just, I love you, Boston. I had a great time. I love your city. I love visiting your city. It's just an interesting dynamic. I also find that for the pick four, right? So like everyone, you said you don't do trades, your mock drafts, but literally everyone is assuming the Cardinals are going to trade out of four. And I think it's absolutely banana pants for like this to happen, right? Because nobody already has more draft capital than the Cardinals. Like, they already have the most. They have the most draft capital in this draft. And like, I get it. You want to be greedy, right? Like, you want to get fat. You want to get as fat as possible. It's the way, if you can get stuff for your pick. But like, the scenario of them like trading out of four and then trading back up to five or six to come back for Marvin Harrison, I just like just take Marvin Harrison. Like, you already have the most draft capital. Like, let's not get cute. Like, you don't have to. Like, they're not in a situation where like they have to stockpile like this war chest of picks, right? Like, you already have the picks. You have them already. Like, just start making them. So it's gonna be interesting to see how that scenario plays out too, because if I'm the Cardinals, I'm just locking it. If I get to four and nobody's taking Marvin Harrison, and like it's a by far a clear need for my quarterback that's already expensive and making $40 million now for the first year of his NFL career, I got
That absolutely makes sense. The only trade that I would be okay with them making would be if the Giants decide they're all in on a quarterback and they want to jump up to that spot. Because then, you might, you know, the fifth pick is now a wild card because someone could, you know, they could take, the Chargers could take a quarterback, a receiver, or someone could trade into that spot. So maybe you don't get your pick of the receivers, But if you have to settle for the second receiver, I'm okay with that. I like Neighbors a lot too. So if they miss out on Harrison and have to take Neighbors at six, that's a trade that I could see happening. But yeah, if I'm them, there's no way I'm trading down to like 11, 12, 13 and missing out on those top tier receivers.
Yeah, there's definitely a non-zero chance in the darkest timeline of this draft where the Cardinals trade out of four, believing they have something set up with, you know, Harbaugh or, you know, in New York, and like, they just can't pull it off, like the comeback up. It's like, they got froze out of those top three guys. It would just be like the worst possible outcome for that to happen. Even, you know, picking up an extra, you know, probably what, second round pick, like in the process, that go move down, you know, seven spots with like the Vikings or something like that. It would be absolutely, you know, just the worst thing to happen if you're a Cardinals fan. Spoiler alert, like you do have Marvin Harrison as number one on your actual big board, which means Caleb Williams is number two. Now we have a really good inkling that Caleb Williams is going number one overall, but I just want to talk about Caleb Williams from a perspective of, you know, how much of a home run do you believe he is? Where does he compare to, like, you know, previous prospects for you? I can tell you, like, in my stuff, like that's like completely objective. Like he scores like 96th percentile, like in like all of these different areas, like overall. But he is a guy that when you look at him, he is a little smaller than like we typically would, you know, like a quarterback. The weight's not a huge deal, but he's a few inches shorter than like CJ Stroud even was last year. And like people even had like an issue, was like, is CJ Stroud, you know, built like this? And we've seen these smaller quarterbacks. It used to be a thing where people were throwing it out the window a little bit because guys were just kind of getting smaller in general in college football. But like we have seen a lot of the smaller quarterbacks not really hit recently. And does, like, you know, is there maybe more floor with Caleb Williams than we're assuming, or is it just like a no brainer? Like this dude, like he's the goods.
I mean, I definitely don't think it's like he's a perfectly polished NFL quarterback. Like he's not going to come in, you know, there's been a conversation about him and Andrew Luck, obviously. So he's clearly the most hyped quarterback since Luck. And I see them.
Yeah. Like Luck and Lawrence.
Yeah. Luck and Lawrence. Luck is the only, I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years now covering the draft. Luck's the only one that I ever thought was like, you can't screw it up. He's just going to come in and be an NFL starting quarterback from day one. No questions asked. Obviously there've been other guys who have done it, but he was the only one that as a prospect, I felt extremely confident it was going to happen because with all these guys, so much development is usually needed. And that's definitely the case for Williams as well. I think the reason why he's so hyped up is because Patrick Mahomes has sort of reset what we think a quarterback can be, right? Like he's just set the bar so much higher now for what the peak of the position is with his athleticism and the crazy plays that he's able to make. Like I did not have a first round grade on Patrick Mahomes. And I mean, I certainly thought that this ceiling was in him, but we just hadn't really seen anybody actually do it at the NFL level. We've seen guys play like Mahomes in college. And you know, like Johnny Manziel is an example. Like he kind of played like Mahomes does in college, but it obviously didn't translate, right? Like those types of players that just play with their hair on fire in college and just run around and make plays, it doesn't translate. And so that was the biggest question with Mahomes. And yet he has now made it work. Like he's made it work at an elite level. And so I think the best comparison I can make as far as why Caleb Williams is viewed this way is it's sort of like when LeBron entered the league, he was the most hyped prospect ever because he was so unique. And we had never really seen someone at that size do what he was able to do, play all five positions and just be that type of player at the size that he was. And so he was viewed as like a one-of-one type of prospect. But then 4 years later, Kevin Durant came along and did the exact same thing, basically, except he was even taller, right? And now it's become normal for teams to seek out those big, you know, and then like 10 years later, Kristaps Porzingis came around. His career obviously got derailed because of injuries, but that he was, you know, being that all five position player at 7'2" then. And it's just sort of the league changed what they looked for and what they asked players to do. So when Mahomes entered the league and had success, I think it made everybody look at Caleb Williams differently. If Mahomes didn't exist, I don't think we're having the same conversation about Caleb Williams, because we would look at what he did in college and think, you can't do that in the NFL. You can't just run around for 5, 6, 7 seconds and then expect to stop and make a play. But Mahomes has shown us that you can actually do that sometimes, as long as you rein it in a little bit and as long as you mostly play within the structure of the offense. You can actually make those types of plays in the NFL and you can win games doing so. So I think that's the big reason why we're viewing Williams differently, because he did it at such a high level in college, even a higher level than Mahomes did. He had more success than Mahomes in college. And I think it's just changed our expectation that now we're looking at someone like Caleb Williams with a blueprint for how that can work in the NFL. But the development is still needed, just as it was with Mahomes. Mahomes didn't come in and play year one. And I think that was really smart of the Chiefs to let him sit and just sort of, you know, learn from the sidelines, let him see the speed of the game and work with him in practice. Williams isn't going to have the benefit of that, obviously, in Chicago. He's going to have to come in and do it right away. And if it fails, that is potentially one of the reasons why, because maybe some of the bad habits they aren't able to coach out of him, because that certainly happens to guys. But I think that's why he is hyped up to such an extreme degree, is that we have a blueprint for how this can translate. And he's the first guy we're going to test it out on, because, you know, Mahomes did it. He's the one of one right now. But now Williams comes along and we're probably going to see others who are allowed to play this style of football come along after him.
Yeah, Mahomes is interesting. You know, I'm no, you know, college evaluator, but I mean, my model loved Patrick Mahomes. He is the highest graded quarterback in that class. Him and Deshaun Watson were kind of neck and neck, and not anywhere close to Mitchell Trubisky, who went, you know, way higher than both those guys. You know, sorry, Bears fans, to relive that. But, you know, he was probably on a trajectory to win a second Heisman last year. USC was 6-0. They started 6-0. I think he had 22 touchdowns, one interception through six games, 11 yards surpassed him. Then, like, that team started to fall apart. Like, they had a ton of offensive line injuries. And we started to see a little bit of the hero ball kind of fall apart for him a little bit the back half of the year. But he was also in a situation where, like, he had to do it. Like, there was no, that had to be the offense. The one thing that Caleb Williams has, like, a big stark difference from Patrick Mahomes, and Patrick Mahomes has been great in the NFL and was even going back to college was great. It's just, like, he didn't take sacks ever. He was only sacked on 9.8% of his pressures his final season at Texas Tech. And then since he's gone into the NFL since 2017, he's been sacked at the lowest rate of his pressures in the NFL. Like, you can't sack this dude. And Caleb was a little bit opposite. He ate a lot of sacks. You know, he was sacked on 22% of his pressures last year. Where he was really good, though, was when he tried to avoid. It wasn't a situation like Justin Fields where Caleb is taking a lot of sacks where he is essentially holding the football and buying time, because when he got out of the pocket, he was only sacked on 4% of his dropbacks outside of the pocket. You compare it to someone like Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels was sacked on 19% of his dropbacks where he fled the pocket. I mean, you're talking about, you know, five times the rate. So, I mean, it is an interesting kind of say when you look at that USC dynamic as the season ended, and it's only really the only blip we have on Williams and his college sample, and people kind of, you know, you don't want to overestimate that, but like, that's what he had to do. Like, that defense was trash. The offensive line fell apart. It is, you can make an excuse for it. And what's interesting about Caleb Williams in context of this draft is the Chicago Bears are pretty unique for the number one draft selection. Typically, you've hinted at a million times, like, these guys are going to some pretty bad spots. Like, there's a reason these teams are drafting highly, right? This Bears situation is different because they kicked the can in quarterback last year when they had the number one pick. They trade down. They take a right tackle. They acquire some more assets. The team kind of overexceeded last year, too, outside of quarterback. You know, and the defense definitely played a lot better for the Bears, came together better than they thought. DJ Moore had his best season of his career. You trade for Keenan Allen. Now you're coming into a lot better situation than number one picks have had to go into, which is kind of a different dynamic, too, for this draft. It's pretty unique for Caleb Williams. You know, he's not going to be asked, I don't think, to just do everything, even, you know what I mean, outside of being the quarterback and, you know, having to excel. It's different than what Justin Fields had to do in Chicago, is what I'm saying. Oh, for sure.
Especially when you factor in who they might get at number nine. If they could get Roma Dunze or, you know, Neighbors or whoever is on the board there, there's a strong possibility that one of the top receivers is there. And if you're throwing to DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, and Roma Dunze, that's crazy. I mean, that's a top tier wide receiver room right there. And to be able to do that as a rookie, man, the ceiling, they would have some, they would be one of the most exciting teams in football right out of the gate. And they would win some games.
Yeah. You deserve it. I'm ready for the Bears.
The other thing I wanted to mention about the USC, you mentioned sort of their collapse and how he didn't play as well down the stretch. And part of it was the reason that he sort of had to put it all on his shoulders. But one of the things that stood out to me in watching those games was USC quit. Like, they just flat out quit down the stretch, and especially on defense. There was just an obvious lack of hustle. Guys just not running after the ball. And Caleb Williams never quit. Like, he was trying, he was doing everything within his power to put the team on his shoulders and try to win those games, even when all was lost. And there was even some talk at the very end of the season that he might just sit out at the end, because obviously all of their expectations had gone out the window once they hit that losing streak. And he was a lock to be the number one overall pick already. And he'd sat out the bowl game, but he didn't quit on the team during the regular season. And we keep hearing more reports all through the offseason about how much his teammates love him. And I think it's just watching those games, you could see why. Like, the team was quitting around him, and yet he was doing everything he could to keep the team focused and continue to try to win games, even when it was a lost season for them. And I think that says a lot about somebody, especially given what, given what the expectation was for him entering the year, knowing that he was the future number one overall pick. That was a really easy situation for him to also quit and to just play it safe and try and not get hurt. And he didn't do it. And so I think that through those struggles, we learned a little bit about the type of competitor that he is, which should just make you, beyond the talent, should make you even more confident that he's the type of player who's going to put in the effort to try to develop further also.
Yeah, well, we're kind of against the gun here, but I do want to get a take here, because we brought up Justin Fields, we brought up the situation, how bad it went. The actual inverse conversation we had about J.J. McCarthy is how I feel about Jaden Daniels. I have a lot of questions about Jaden Daniels, future as a quarterback in the NFL, but from a fantasy football stance, it's just a no-brainer, right? Like, he's even if he's bad, he's going to be good for fantasy football. It's a walk in the park. You draft him. But like Justin Fields, his situation just reminds me so much of like Justin Fields, right? And Justin Fields actually probably had worse wide receivers than Jaden Daniels had, but you have this kid that at age 23, gets the extra season. He's playing with two guys that are going in the first round. The conditions that he played in make it, I think, hard for me to just say, all right, this is going to fully translate. Like Justin Fields, right? Like, Justin Fields didn't have to do a lot of things at Ohio State that he ended up having to do in the NFL, and they didn't work. The quick game, not being able to avoid sacks, holding the football. And Jaden Daniels has all of those in his profile. I'm actually kind of scared of Jaden Daniels. Like, I mean, do you share any concerns? Like, if you're like, do you just feel like it's just like, there's too much ceiling here, you have to go for it? Or like,
I share the concerns, but I definitely bump up players who have that type of athleticism, because that's just the way the game is going. Yep. 10 years ago, there's probably no way I put a first round grade on him, but I'm okay with a team drafting him in the first round, because his ability to run around and make plays is just so valuable. I mean, he doesn't need to hit his ceiling as a passer in order for him to be a decent quarterback because of what he can do with his legs. So that boosts his floor pretty significantly just with the way the game is played these days. I do have a lot of questions though. I mean, like you mentioned, his ability to handle pressure is a bit of a red flag. You can definitely see, I think he's better at it than Fields was, because he does make some plays under pressure, whereas Fields was pretty bad under pressure. Like, he took too many sacks, he made some bad throws. With Daniels, it's sort of like, when he does stand in there and try to make plays under pressure, he does come through sometimes. He has some really great plays under pressure, but 45% of his dropbacks under pressure last year were either sacks or scrambles. And that can't be your mindset as an NFL quarterback, no matter how athletic you are. You got to stand in there and try to make more plays under pressure, because it's just going to happen more often.
Right.
You're going to have guys flying in off the edge more often. You have to be willing to try to stand in there and make that play. And so the fact that he can scramble is a huge asset, but that was his go-to far too often. He's got to stand in the pocket and make those plays. And I think he probably can, if he can, if you can just force him to do it and live with the mistakes that are going to come from it early in his career, if he can really make himself commit to doing it, I think talent is there. But the other factor that I think lowers his ceiling a little bit, strength is not elite. And so I do have some questions, like what is that going to look like if you're trying to make him more of a pocket passer, which he's just going to have to be more than he was in college, just because that's how the NFL works. Is your offense a little bit then limited by the fact that he doesn't have that top tier arm strength? So that's another concern. But like I said, the athleticism is just so special that you almost have to be willing to take a chance on that type of guy if you need a quarterback.
Yeah, you look at Jaden Daniels, who conditioned 16% of his pass attempts came against top 25 defenses. You look at guys like Caleb Williams was at 35%. J.J. McCarthy is at 50% now, came in the first half. Like you said, maybe not all downfield either. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of like this quarterback class in a nutshell, though. I think it's very unique. I think it's very, diverse, and like where we have these three young quarterbacks, these three older quarterbacks. I'm very curious to see how that plays out and how that kind of changes how the position is handled, because it does stand the way things are right now. Like, it could have a thumbprint, on how teams handle things like in the future. We didn't really kind of go over Bo Nix. Like, everyone kind of feels, similarly to Bo Nix, that he's fine, right? do you have a different opinion?
Yeah, I mean, like we said at the beginning, Bo Nix is, because he's had so much experience, you know what you're getting in him, and you could comfortably put him in as your starter as a rookie. And if you got a good team around him, you might be okay. I think the other thing that just adds a little bit of confidence to Bo Nix is we saw him evolve throughout his college career, which I think speaks to his, just his mental capacity for learning the game more. It adds a little bit of confidence there. He, early in his career, he was one of those quarterbacks who was making crazy throws down the field and just killing you in certain, having some highlights, but killing you in certain games. And he developed into a very good game manager his final season at Oregon and almost won a Heisman by playing that style of football. So seeing that evolution, it's encouraging. It means that there probably isn't a crazy high ceiling for him, but it definitely speaks to his work ethic and intelligence.
Anything outside of these guys that we talked about? Obviously no one else has projected even for first round value, but like, is there anything in the back of this draft? I mean, a lot of these guys are going to end up probably starting some games. We saw guys like Tyson Bagent start games last year, Aiden O'Connell. Like, anything here with the rest of this class? Does anyone give you like a spark of intrigue if you're drafting, day two, third round or anything? Like, you're just like, I'm going to add this guy to my roster and see what happens.
Not really. There's a surprising lack of upside with a lot of these quarterbacks later in the draft. There just aren't a lot. There isn't really that guy who has like crazy athleticism, crazy arm talent, like Malik Willis a couple of years ago. Obviously, he was a pretty bad prospect overall, but you could just see the raw tools and think, maybe in a few years. That doesn't really exist. I guess the closest thing we have to that is Joe Milton, the quarterback from Tennessee, who just has a monster arm. But he has no idea where the ball is going when he releases it. I mean, he is just a brutal downfield passer. That was an offense, Tennessee, that he was in, where with Hendon Hooker, obviously that's what they did. Like, they had a great season throwing the ball downfield. And then you put Joe Milton, who has a much bigger arm, and by the second half of that season, they were exclusively handing the ball off pretty much, because Milton just could not get the ball to his receivers down the field. But he's the one guy who stands out as like, who knows, maybe if he figures it out, he has like the crazy NFL size and arm strength. The only other guy that I'm a little bit interested in is Spencer Rattler. I don't see like huge upside with him, because he also doesn't have like a crazy arm strength, but he was very highly touted and had some flashes when he was at Oklahoma, had a few good games at South Carolina as well. I mentioned route adjusted on target rate as a stat that I really like, and he fared very well by that metric. He ranked 9th in Power 5 last year. Actually better than Penix, Nix, or better than Penix, Williams, and May, who are obviously in that top tier of quarterback prospects. So to be a quarterback like that, who, if you could develop into him into a little bit more of a game manager, knowing that he's had a lot of experience, maybe you could get him to be that type of player. He threw downfield a decent amount in college, but if you get him to sort of be a little bit more of a game manager in the NFL and take advantage of that accuracy, I could see maybe him being a guy who starts some games and doesn't look bad, but I don't see a huge ceiling there either.
Yeah. He was a huge Devy guy. Obviously, everyone was trying to get quarterbacks that went to anyone that gets attached to Lincoln. Like, we were trying to get quarterbacks. And ironically, Caleb ended up replacing him, at Oklahoma, and then followed into USC. But he was a huge Devy guy. And like I said, Nix was a huge Devy guy too. Back when he joined Auburn. He's like kind of the only one that stands out. And like you said, like, this is another, like, a lot of these guys in the back of this class follow suit, just not as great as these guys that we talk about, where they're just older. You know, guys like, you know, Sam Hartman's played, like, the dude's played like 70 college games. Jordan Travis, you know, obviously had the bad ankle injury, but he's played 6 years, you know, played 6 years at Florida State, like all these guys. But that's kind of where we are with this draft class. It's, and like I said, it shows up in other positions too, but definitely I think the quarterback class took advantage of it the most, and just how, like, we wouldn't have been talking about some of these guys last year, and now we are. You know, guys like Xavier Leggett, like, probably doesn't even go to the combine, you know, out of South Carolina last year. It is on the board. But yeah, definitely a unique year. I'm excited about this quarterback class. I do think there is, like, upside here. I hope it does work out for these guys. Obviously, there's some risk we talked about, but I want as many good players in the NFL as possible. We need good quarterbacks, especially in this current state of the NFL where the defensive meta is winning right now. We need points. We need points scored. But I love it. If you want to read any of Ryan's stuff, obviously he's crushing the NFL draft right now for these next, you know, 4 weeks until the draft process. And then I think you'll do will you do an early, like, 2025 draft the day after the draft or anything?
Yeah, that I'm not sure when it'll be up, but definitely the week after the draft, we'll get an early 2025 draft out there.
I love it. Yeah. So you can check all his stuff at sharpfootballanalysis.com. His stuff is all free. You can check out my stuff in the draft kit. Remember, you can use promo code BESTBALLNFL, all one word. Grab a few bucks off of that early. Me and Ray Summerlin are going to be crushing all kinds of content for that the rest of the offseason. I will be back next week. We're going to be talking about this running back class with Ray Garvin. We'll see you then. Sharp Football Fantasy. Take it easy.